This one happens after the funeral, after the burial, back at the house. Sooner or later, someone is bound to say the following, especially after a few drinks. You know, I think he's up there now, smiling down at us. And I think he's pleased, smiling down at us.
Smiling down. Smiling down.
And I think he's pleased.
Welcome to New World Notes, a series that explores the gap between the America we want and the America they're trying to make us settle for, and how we the people can reestablish our commonwealth and reclaim our democracy. Edited by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. It's the new year, time to look back and reckon what we've gained this past year and what we've lost. We know the answers in general. We've gained little or nothing, and we've lost way too much. But it helps to be in touch with the specifics as well. So we'll celebrate and commemorate some voices that have enriched our lives and improved the world, voices that we lost to death during 2008. And yet, in another sense, some voices we will never entirely lose. Voices such as Andrew Marvell's, Cole Porter's, George Orwell's, John Kennedy's, Billie Holiday's. To the list we must now add Molly Ivins, Studs Terkel, Utah Phillips, and our focus in this installment, George Carlin. I felt the closest to Carlin of this four. His death really brought me back to W.H. Auden's beautiful and powerful poem of 1939, I think, on the death of poet William Butler Yeats. In Auden's words, the moment of Yeats's death was nothing less than a transubstantiation. Here is Yeats dying. The stanza's last four words announce his death. But for him, it was his last afternoon as himself. The provinces of his body revolted. The squares of his mind were empty. Silence invaded the suburbs. The current of his feeling failed. He became his admirers. The transformation of the poet at the moment of his death is profound, but it's also instantaneous, and I guess ineffable. Those last four words are not even a complete sentence, but just the final clause of several in a long sentence. The current of his feeling failed. He became his admirers. The poem continues. Now he is scattered among 100 cities. As with Yeats then, so with Auden later, and now with George Carlin. The words of a dead man are modified in the guts of the living, the poem also notes. From my guts to yours, let's hear a brief Carlin sketch on religion. He didn't much care for the stuff. Then a quick word by me, and two more sketches by Carlin on social class.
In the boat department, a businessman can't hold a candle to a clergyman. Because I got to tell you the truth, folks. I got to tell you the truth. When it comes to bullshit, big time, major league bullshit, you have to stand in awe. In awe of the all-time champion of false promises and exaggerated claims, religion. No contest. No contest. Religion. Religion easily has the greatest bullshit story ever told. Think about it. Religion has actually convinced people that there's an invisible man living in the sky who watches everything you do every minute of every day. And the invisible man has a special list of 10 things he does not want you to do. And if you do any of these 10 things, he has a special place full of fire and smoke and burning and torture and anguish where he will send you to live and suffer and burn and choke and scream and cry forever and ever till the end of time. But he loves you. He loves you and he needs money. He always needs money. He's all powerful, all perfect, all knowing, and all wise. Somehow, just can't handle money. Religion takes in billions of dollars, they pay no taxes, and they always need a little more. Now, you talk about a good bullshit story. Holy shit.
The late George Carlin, who did the world a grave disservice by dying on June 22, 2008, at age 71. Remember the earlier poet, Alexander Pope? About 200 years ago, he wrote what's now a famous definition of wit, or true wit, as he terms it. True wit is nature to advantage dressed, what oft was thought, but ne'er so well expressed. Good iambic pentameter, as you'd expect. Of all the word art produced in this decade, Carlin's comes closest to matching Pope's definition of wit, I think. What oft was thought, but ne'er so well expressed. Carlin shows in a nutshell what's wrong with a God character imagined by Judaism and by Christianity. Old man Jehovah. He has no virtues, noble or heroic, by any human standards. Roy Zimmerman addressed the same problem in his song, Jerry Falwell's God.
And if people are jealous and judgmental and vengeful and violent, maybe it's because you made them in your image. And if people have cast you out of the town square, maybe it's because you are a finger-pointing, moralizing, rageaholic stone drag who gives deities a bad name. And he smote me.
Carlin's thoughts on religion are not deep or complex, but they're spot on. He makes the essence of organized religion sparkle in that nutshell. He's nailed it. Carlin was one of the few wordsmiths to take on the issue of class conflict, which is the war of the rich and powerful against everybody else. Here are two sketches on the class war. They Own You was recorded sometime in the past 8 years. I don't know when. Class War goes back to 1992. 16 years later, now that Bear Stearns executives are getting golden parachutes that we are paying, while we get only the shaft, well, today more and more Americans are beginning to see the truth of what Carlin told us back then. Better late than never. Maybe. And yeah, I'm guilty, along with the rest of them.
Politicians have traditionally hidden behind three things: the flag, the Bible, and children. No child left behind. No child left behind. Oh, really? Well, it wasn't long ago you were talking about giving kids a head start. Head start, left behind. Someone's losing ground here. But there's a reason. There's a reason. There's a reason for this. There's a reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. They're irrelevant. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the... They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. You know something? They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table to figure out how badly they're getting f***ed by a system that threw them overboard 30 years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your retirement money. They want it back so they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. And by the way, it's the same big club they use to beat you over the head with all day long when they tell you what to believe. All day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged, and nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hard-working people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hard-working people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich cockfuckers who don't give a fuck about them. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't care about you at all. At all. At all. Man. You know? And nobody seems to notice, nobody seems to care. That's what the owners count on, the fact that Americans will probably remain willfully ignorant because the owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American dream because you have to be asleep to believe it.
See the glory.
Tell you what. Now, to balance the scale, I'd like to talk about some things that bring us together. Things that point out our similarities instead of our differences. Because that's all you ever hear about in this country is our differences. That's all the media and the politicians are ever talking about, the things that separate us, things that make us different from one another. That's the way the ruling class operates in any society. They try to divide the rest of the people. They keep the lower and the middle classes fighting with each other so that they, the rich, can run off with all the f***ing money. Fairly simple thing happens to work. You know, anything different, that's what they're going to talk about. Race, religion, ethnic and national background, jobs, income, education, social status, sexuality, anything they can do, keep us fighting with each other so that they can keep going to the bank. You know how I describe the economic and social classes in this country? The upper class keeps all of the money, pays none of the taxes. The middle class pays all of the taxes, does all of the work. The poor are there just to scare the shit out of the middle class. Keep them showing up at those jobs. So stirring up the shit is something I like to do from time to time, but I also like to know that I can come back to these little things we have in common, little universal moments that we share separately, the things that make us the same. They're so small we hardly ever talk about them. Did you ever look at your watch? And then you don't know what time it is. And you have to look again. And you still don't know the time. So you look a third time and somebody says, "What time is it?" You say, "I don't know."
Those TV preachers come out every night.
With one hand on the television.
They try to tell you what's wrong and what's right. But if you ask about something to eat,
just a hot dog,
they're gonna answer in voices so sweet.
Yes.
You will eat by and by.
By and by.
In that glorious land above the sky.
Way up high.
Work and pray.
Why?
Now the stars
if you want something good in your life. They will say, knock it off with all that strife. They want you to be a stooge for the bosses, that's what they tell. And if not, you all are going to hell.
It's the Lake of Fire.
And that's
working folk of all countries unite.
Brothers of the world unite.
Side by side, we for freedom will fight.
All the way to the
place. When this world and its wealth we have gained.
Yes, it is.
To the grafters, we'll sing this refrain.
Follow me, boys.
You will eat.
You will eat.
By and by.
By and by.
Once you've learned how to cook and how to fry.
Dumpster diver. Chop some wood.
It'll do you good.
It'll do you good.
And you'll eat in the sweet by and by.
Oh, that's good.
That's right. And you'll eat in the sweet by and by. That ain't no lie.
No lie.
Pittsburgh's own Ann Feeney with guest Commander Cody. That song is titled Preacher and the Slave, and said to be written by legendary labor agitator Joe Hill himself. As you can hear, Hill and George Carlin see eye to eye on several issues, including class oppression and the low value of organized religions. I like that reference to the Starvation Army. A third important issue to Carlin was language. A good share of Carlin's comedy routines is about corrupt language and its use by corrupt institutions to throw citizens off the track of what the institutions actually are doing to them. To choose the verb reform instead of the verb steal is a language choice, as in, we've got to reform Social Security. Michael Parenti said this on this program a couple months ago. To rename the estate tax the death tax is a language choice. And when you abolish this tax on the super rich, it's easier to persuade the average person that getting rid of the death tax frees everyone from this heavy burden. Bernie Sanders said this 3 or 4 weeks ago on this program. Even in the early 1990s, when this recording was made, Carlin was saying this. To find authority abusing language to boost its own power and intimidate citizens into sheer docility, look no further than the friendly skies of United and cohort. And once again, the poet was also a prophet. The only obvious goals of the Bush gang's alleged war on terror at home have been redistributing money upwards and making citizens more docile, more accepting of the behaviors of a police state. And what venue did the gang pick for their first and main assault on us? The airport, of course. And as Carlin now shows, the government-approved, government-regulated airlines had already gotten us ready for this next step. You want to catch a flight to Southeast Cuba? Hey, buddy, as Rich Wyman sings, you're already here. You just don't know, in Guantanamo.
Something else we have in common, flying on the airlines and listening to the airlines' announcements and trying to pretend to ourselves that the language they're using is really English. Doesn't seem like it to me. About this time, someone is telling you to get on the plane. Get on the plane, get on the plane. I say, f*** you, I'm getting in the plane. In the plane. Let Evel Knievel get on the plane. I'll be in here with you folks in uniform. There seems to be less wind in here. They might tell you you're on a non-stop flight. Well, I don't think I care for that. No, I insist that my flight stop. Preferably at an airport. It's those sudden, unscheduled cornfield and housing development stops that that seemed to interrupt the flow of my day. Here's one they just made up. Near miss. When two planes almost collide, they call it a near miss. It's a near hit. A collision is a near miss. Look, they nearly missed. Yes, but not quite. They might tell you your flight has been delayed because of a change of equipment. Broken plane. Tell me to put my seat back forward. Well, I don't bend that way. If I could put my seat back forward, I'd be in porno movies. Then they mentioned carry-on luggage. First time I heard carry-on, I thought they were going to bring a dead deer on board. I thought, what the hell do they mean with that? Don't they have the little TV dinners anymore? Then I thought, carry on, there's going to be a party. People are going to be carrying on the plane. Well, I don't care for that. I like a serious attitude on the plane, especially on the flight deck, which is the latest euphemism for cockpit. Can't imagine why they wouldn't want to use a lovely word like cockpit, can you? Especially with all those stewardesses going in and out of it all the time. As soon as they close the door to the aircraft, that's when they begin the safety lecture. I love the safety lecture. This is my favorite part of the airplane ride. I listen very carefully to the safety lecture, especially that part where they teach us how to use the seat belts. Imagine this. Here we are, a plane full of grown human beings, many of us partially educated, and they're actually taking time out to describe the intricate workings of a belt buckle. Place the small metal flap into the buckle. Well, I asked for clarification at that point. The safety lecture continues. The next thing they do, they tell you to locate your nearest emergency exit. I do this immediately. I locate my nearest emergency exit, and then I plan my route. I say, let's see, I'll go around the fat step on the widow's head, push those children out of the way, knock down the paralyzed midget, and get out of the plane where I can help others. I can be of no help to anyone if I'm lying unconscious in the aisle with some big standing on my head. I must get out of the plane, go to a nearby farmhouse, have a Dr. Pepper, and call the police. The safety lecture continues.
In the unlikely event...
This is a very suspect phrase. Especially coming as it does from an industry that is willing to lie about arrival and departure times.
In the unlikely event of a sudden change in cabin pressure...
Roof flies off!
An oxygen mask will drop down in front of you. Place the mask over your face and breathe normally.
Well, I have no problem with that. I always breathe normally when I'm in a 600-mile-an-hour uncontrolled vertical dive. I also shit normally. Right in my pants! They tell you to adjust your oxygen mask before helping your child with his.
I did not need to be told that.
In fact, I'm probably going to be too busy screaming to help him at all. This will be a good time for him to learn self-reliance. If he can program his VCR, he can jolly well learn to adjust an oxygen mask. Fairly simple thing, just a little rubber band in the back is all it is. Not nearly as complicated as, say, for instance, a seatbelt. The safety lecture continues.
in the unlikely event of a water landing.
Well, what exactly is a water landing? Am I mistaken, or does this sound somewhat similar to crashing into the ocean?
Your seat cushion can be used as a flotation device.
Well, imagine that. My seat cushion, just what I need to float around the North Atlantic for several days, clinging to a pillow full of beer farts.
The flight continues. A little later on, toward the end, we hear...
The captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign.
Well, who gives a shit who turned it on? What does that have to do with anything? It's on, isn't it? And who made this man a captain? Might I ask? Did I sleep through some sort of an armed forces swearing-in ceremony or something? Captain, he's a f***ing pilot, and let him be happy with that. If those sightseeing announcements are any mark of his intellect, he's lucky to be working at all. Tell the captain, Air Marshal Carlin says, go f*** yourself.
Thanks for listening. New World Notes is produced in the spacious underground studios of WWUH-FM, a community service of the University of Hartford. The opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily represent the views of the presenter, station management, staff, or licensee, and they are protected by the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Your feedback on this program is most welcome. Email kdowst, K-D-O-W-S-T, at hotmail.com. New World Notes is available off the air by internet stream, podcast, or MP3 download at your convenience. There's an archive of shows you can download. There's also a weekly newsletter and a blog. All is free. For download, podcast, or more information, start at the blog. We're at http://newworldnotes.blogspot.com. No www, just newworldnotes.blogspot.com. To receive the newsletter, email a note to Kay Doust. Once again, that's K-D-O-W-S-T at hotmail.com. From darkest New England, this is Kenneth Doust, wishing you a good week and advising, throw those money changers out of the temple, illegitimi non carborundum, keep the faith, and please tune in again. Will you?